G'day, welcome to Radio Notes, where those in music talk life, those in life chat music, and more.
Music is probably the only language that everyone can agree on.
Andrew of Tetsuians, who are our feature guest this episode, have a debut album and at time of episode release, a live stream performance at the end of the week. Before hearing from them, let's dive
in the box.
Debut from Camille Trial, Humming Chains, recorded with Shane Nicholson at Sound Hole. Trial has a Bachelor of Music under their belt, with the video for the tune produced by Escape Visuals and shot on their cattle property in Queensland, Australia. Jolene, an online blog, is reporting the debut album, also recorded by Nicholson, will be called Devil's Drink. Ben Abraham, new tune is Satellite, his first tune out on Atlantic Records, includes Tillman Robinson, who I chatted back with in episode 20, has done the string quartet parts with the Penny Quartet, and it was recorded at Headgate Recording Studios. In Abraham's own words, sometimes, as a writer, you feel a song with words you need to hear yourself, and if you need to hear them too, I hope this song finds you. They also co-wrote Kesha's Grammy-nominated tune, Praying. And when I last spoke with him back in 2014, he'd been working with Sarah Bareilles and, between all that, touring with Missy Higgins and recorded a tune with her, Running So Fast. Abraham latest is Satellite and just signed, as I mentioned, internationally with Atlantic. Stay High, Brittany Howard of the Alabama Shakes goes solo with an album, Jamie, out September 20th, 2019. This cut features Terry Crews, Soul Groove, offering promising insight to the debut album from them. The film clip, shot in Athens, Alabama, has a dedication to KJ Howard too, their father. Christine Lamb, Hot Hot Kiss, Love to Infinity, set of remixes landed into my inbox. Has a golden guitar as a new talent, and the third album, the original of the tune features on, to be called Broken Lines, series of six club mixes for those of issues with NAS being country. These bangers are demanding a listen in the genre too. Side note, on their website, the famous Theberton Theatre is spelt The Barton. Anyway, on a national tour with Lee Kernighan. Here's one I've been eagerly waiting the release of, Borrow My Body, Lisa Caruso, the artist, guitar slung with vocal delivery like few dare, teamed up with Ben Fletcher, who I was first introduced to with his group The Devoted Few, and these days known for his work with Marina and the Diamonds, as well as Sarah Blasco, who has also worked on Caruso's Shake Baby Shake single, which made its way onto the TV series Good Girls. Debut album for them is said to be out before the close of 2019. Sparse and perfect. Let's now head to our feature guest.
Tetsuians. Described as two parts Melbourne indie rock and one part Noosa surf vibe, making them a three-piece with a debut self-titled album out now. Recently, in the same state rehearsing for an upcoming live show that will be streamed, Andrew, Amber and Trent on a comfy couch joined Radio Notes over Skype for a chat.
Welcome to Radio Notes.
Thanks for having us.
Let's start with talking about the music. How's that experience been, releasing a self-titled album of this quality?
Challenging. Andrew and I in Melbourne and Amber's in Sunshine Coast, so it's been interesting trying to record over the digitally, but we have been travelling interstate to finish off bits and pieces, but it has been an eye-opener. I don't know whether we'll do it the same way again.
How do you think it might be done differently next time?
Oh, there might be a few airfares involved and just a bit of travel, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But when you've performed these songs live, it all comes back together, 10 years that you guys have been together as a band.
That's right. That's where the airfares and the money comes into play. Either Trent and I will go to Queensland and hopefully do some gigs, and Amber comes to Melbourne and hopefully do some gigs in that period that we're either there or she's down here.
But that kind of makes it extra special when we do it, because we won't be doing it like every week. So I guess it just puts an extra impetus onto it, and so we don't take it for granted.
Can I take you guys back to when it first started, just so we have a bit of a history of the band?
It actually started out through Melbourne Music Forum, where you could like post ads and, you know, musicians wanted stuff for sale. So Trent posted an ad looking for a drummer. He was in a band called The Wireless. So this was way before Tetsuians. So I responded to that, pretty much auditioned, liked what music they were doing. We had very, very similar tastes in music and all of that. And that's pretty much how it all started with Trent and I.
Where were you at the time needing to make this collaboration happen?
I was actually in a duo at the time. Oddly enough, we actually came out of the comedy scene and then started, we weren't enjoying that. And we said, no, we want to make some real music. But we were working with an 808 drum machine, limits you. It's got that gated 80s sound. So we thought, yeah, a bit of human element wouldn't be bad. And we put that out, and luckily Andrew answered, and we've kept him chained up ever since.
So, that's right.
Amber, from your point of view, does comedy play a part at all in your life? Would it have been okay if they continued to be a comedy outfit?
It certainly adds some spice to some of the songs. If you listen to some of the lyrics, they're not your stock standard lyrics. But
nope.
I think it's good that we've moved away from the comedy a little bit.
What's the best element of touring as a trio?
I just love our music and I love playing our music. For me, touring, it's not so much touring, it's just being able to sit behind the drums and play the songs that we've made, regardless if it's to one person or to 50 people. As long as I know that one person is there enjoying it, then that's purely satisfaction for me.
Let's just quickly plug.
Bakehouse Studio is upstairs, big room they have. A lot of bands have used to, film clips, and a few documentaries have been filmed up there as well. So we thought it would be a good, nice open area where people could sort of lounge around rather than the strict, audience performer stage format. So people could sort of just be in the round. We thought we'd live stream it as well. So it's a good way for, anyone else who's watching from interstate or overseas or who can't come to the gig. We're going to be supported by a band called Signal Chain, which are a great Melbourne band as well. So they're coming on to support. It should be a great night.
You mentioned about the live streaming. That obviously is to also keep the element of live as well, so that people can actually see, even though it'd be great if they were in the room, they can still see the live dynamic.
Especially, it's amazing, social media, Instagram. Every time I check my phone, there's always a new like or someone's started following us. So I think a lot of international people as well, it'll be good for them to see that too, because unless someone was willing to pay us to go overseas and do gigs, I don't think it's quite viable just yet. So it'd be good to get for them and for us to get out there and for them to see us from here. The way I look at it, it's very MTV Unplugged, just playing, we're kind of playing in a round circle and just have everyone, whoever's coming or whoever wants to come, just sitting around so they get to see the band at all angles as well. If people want to see the back of my head while I play drums, well, then that's completely fine. Yeah, just close, intimate, but at the same time, not quiet. It'll still be us playing as if we were, like a full gig or a full venue.
Mm. But the great thing is you can schedule it, so people can really mark it in their diaries, so there is that element to it, which is an advantage for bands, rather than, just trying to book a venue which you can't get to and like, oh, no, I've got this on. Really, if you're at home, you can sort of work around it and schedule a time to watch something if you really want to see it.
And lyrically, let's talk about the lyrics now.
They all come from Trent, and we don't, screening-wise, as soon as we see them, we go, yeah, done, yeah, that's, we've never not said no to lyrics, I guess. We have to ask multiple times what the lyrics are about, and then when we get the story, we have to go away and process it for about a couple of hours and then come back and go, okay, we understand now.
Do you feel like you're Trent's therapist?
Yeah, pretty much.
That's where my psychology degree comes in.
Yeah.
Constantly counselling.
Yeah.
Have you used that psychology degree for anything but the band?
No. all my energy's here.
Yeah.
Why did you do a psychology degree?
It's just it was a big interest of mine in high school. It was one subject that jumped out at me. And I guess the ideology back then was that I was going to go and counsel veterans, turn from war and things like that. That was the big ideology back then. But things didn't pan out quite that way. So I was gone to admin and music.
What is the band's view, individually or together, on war?
I'm not a fan of war personally. I know what has happened in the past, and I acknowledge that, but I can't face it. So I can't look at images or video footage or anything like that. The anxiety kicks in tenfold. So my old man's very history buff and he loves watching war documentaries. So every time I go over, I'm like, okay. Thanks. See you later. So, yeah, make peace. Make love, not war.
Trent, you have a song about the Cold War?
That is kind of, it's a two-layered song. It's at the backdrop of the Cold War, I guess, if you will, you know, because it was sort of an impasse. There wasn't a lot going on in terms of fighting, but it was that threat. It was that constant threat. But that's the backdrop of the song. But I guess the idea is also with the family or siblings where there's impasse there. And it's grabbing, I guess, continents or countries and then making them into humans, and they have that human relationship where they, you know, they're not talking, but there's that sort of constant threat of, I'll do this to you, I'm spying on you. And we can do that more now. We're on social media, you know, we can watch each other without actually peering through the window, you know, getting picked up by the police. And so it's weird, like this not actually making contact with the person going, hey, you know, what were we fighting about? Let's resolve it. But there's the more, I guess, technology that we have to actually communicate with each other, the more it puts up barriers between people. So I guess that was the sort of the idea behind it. So it was a bit of a double whammy there.
Amber, you mentioned doing the psychology degree for returned veterans. Was that of the Iraq War or for a Vietnam vet? If you wish, talk a little bit more about that and what was going on for that to happen.
Sure. My family's got a very large involvement in the military, both past and present. I guess it was just a driving force for me back then to help those returned veterans. I heard a lot of stories about people coming back from the Vietnam War and just having no social supports. Mm. So it was a bit of a drive to change that and see that actively changing in society. But as I said, things didn't quite pan out for me, but it is starting to happen now. There's more of a focus on returned servicemen and women. And so it's good to see that happening in society now.
Andrew, how do you process some of those issues that Amber was raising just then, of those that went and served, came back and weren't acknowledged for the hard work they put in for the country they believed in?
Oh, look, I have, as much as I don't like, you know, war and violence, I have total respect for, I honestly couldn't do what those people did. If I grew up in that era and I was forced, I don't know what I would do. So I have absolute, utmost respect for all those people that have what they've done. It's more of a heartbreak than anything of the people that, what people suffered and went through during those times and what, you know, what the human race is capable of doing. And it's more an anxiety of, well, is it still happening? Is it going to happen again? It's more of a heartbreak anxiety than anything else for people.
Through the music, you're able to communicate. Trent, I'm sure you agree with that as well, about your views on various issues and the placement of them. How much do you see the band as a vehicle of communicating those ideas?
The guy sort of spoke about the lyrics. I tend to throw them at them and they don't question them. Maybe they should a little bit more. I think that sometimes they come across as a little bit obtuse, but that's the way I write. And sometimes that can disguise things a little bit. But whilst there is probably a message there or a commentary there, I tend to like to throw in a little bit of mystery into it so it's not really overt. And maybe that's a weakness, but also I like bands that I like and lyrics that I like listening to, I don't necessarily know exactly what it is straight away. It slowly reveals itself. And maybe you've got the wrong idea about what they were trying to get across, but it's a good platform for your own ideas. So, you know, if I hear a song and I totally not get what they were on about, it might give me another idea for another song, and that's cool too. So hopefully that other people can get that out of it as well. But if they get what it was about, then fantastic.
Music's a weird conversation like that, that it appears to be one way, but it definitely is a two-way conversation in delay.
Yeah, it can be. I mean, like, you know, Aerosmith, Love in an Elevator, that's pretty straightforward. But, you know, other ones, I like the slow reveal.
What are some of the band's influences that you individually are bringing to the band?
So my influences are very 70s progressive rock, and I love 80s underground synth new wave and like that late 70s like Roxy music going into like Ultravox new wave synth. And then since coming on board with Trent, obviously, it's surprisingly, even though I'm a lot younger, but I listen to a lot of older music, I didn't really then grow up listening to stuff like, you know, the early 90s stuff, which is, you know, like Pixies and Ween, and that's obviously where Trent gets his I like to think Trink gets his influences from.
So were you listening more to an uncle, a parent, a brother's even records at the time? Why do you think it was a bit older?
My old man's records, into the music, as long as I can remember, always never had the TV on, always had music playing. So always had records playing, always had 60s, 70s, because he's massive, you know, Yes and Moody Blues and Rush and all that British prog rock and American prog rock. So I grew up listening to that and then falling in love with that. And then my drumming influences from there, being drummers like Neil Peart and Carl Palmer, who are just phenomenal drummers for their time. And that's where I kind of put a lot of my drumming into. I take my drumming influences from them. They're probably my biggest. Pink Floyd, Beatles, all the classics as well. Mike Oldfield. So a lot of instrumental long pieces, you know, 20, 30 minute pieces of just total musical madness.
So I'd say my influences were predominantly much more modern and very much into my Aussie rock and a little bit of pop. Heavily 90s influence. Really love Sonic Kate, and I used to love Powderfinger back in the day. And these days I'm really getting into my movie soundtracks and scores, and Hans Zimmer would be one of my biggest influences massively. And so I'm constantly trying to skew the music into having builds and being a bit more epic, but we'll get there down the track.
Was Steph Ashworth then a bit of an idol when you were younger?
Funnily enough, I wasn't really heavily into bass as a younger girl. I was more of a guitarist back then. So these guys brought me on board and asked if I wanted to play bass, and that's actually when I started playing. Yeah, definitely love Steph. She's fantastic, and she's a huge idol now, I guess, more than back then.
But as you mentioned, started with guitar then. So were there some guitar idols amongst those musicians?
A massive guitar influence back in the 90s and early 2000s was the late departed Jeff Buckley. He was probably my biggest idol back then.
We noted from Andrew that it was the records the parents were playing. Did they play a part?
I would say Dad had a very large influence. He used to play MTV and Rage and record all of them on VHS. Mm. And I can almost list those songs back to back and know exactly what was coming up next. I heard them that often. So that was predominantly 80s pop and rock. So big influence there. I grew up knowing Ice House back to front and things like that.
Trent, what influences do you have before it came to the band?
Yeah, it was kind of weird. When I was young, most of the time I was probably spent in a car waiting for Mum at the supermarket or something, just listening to her Lionel Richie tape just on repeat. So that was just consistently in my brain. So I suppose there was hook elements to that. But then in terms of discovering other music, it was sort of by accident. As a young adolescent, I used to stay up late and sneak, and I watched the Elvira Mistress of the Dark Halloween MTV episodes. So she would just play weird stuff. I like that sort of, you know, because it was a slightly creepy element. So she'd play Bauhaus or Echo and the Bunnymen and sometimes B-52s, and you go, what is this world? So it was the first, I guess, foray into, hey, there's something else out there other than the Lionel Richie tapes I'm hearing in the car. So it probably had a warped influence on what I started to listen to. So I slowly just wanted to discover more. I had a best friend, and he would just listen to nothing but Chicago. But his brother was listening to a lot of alternative stuff at the time. So I'd go and hang out with his brother and listen to, you know, like Echo and the Bunnymen. And, yeah, I suppose it's probably a weird hybrid, and it's probably coming out for other people to judge, but yeah, it's coming out in some kind of weird fashion.
Have you experienced Peter Murphy's music from the last couple of years or so? Has Bauhaus still played a part in this stage of your musical career?
Not a huge amount. Certainly, like, sonically, you take the odd cue, you might hear something, you go, oh, that might work for a guitar line or just for a bit of atmosphere, but certainly not the song writing. It was more just, I guess, the sonic sound of it. But there's actually quite a few bands I've seen recently, Nation Blind. They're like Bauhaus, but if they had really cool songs, if they were hooky. So, you know, definitely check them out.
Laura Imbruglia, workshop with her recently.
She was just giving advice on, you know, how to release an album and I guess that process of, you know, when do you start, you know, book all this in, these are all your cues. And it was just, I really love what she's doing, but she's probably the the absolute queen of DIY at the moment, certainly in Australia. It was good just to hear that, I guess, some of the stuff you are doing is probably right. There's probably no right and wrong because it's not always going to work. But, yeah, she had a lot of good advice and, you know, she's got a lot of hard-earned experience there. So, yeah, really, really great night, and it was good that she could do it. Put a time out, you know, just for people who want to know how to do it.
What are some of those challenges that you'd like to share about being a bit of a DIY musician in a DIY band?
For me, being interstate and being away from a lot of the collaboration that these guys can do together, it does make it a bit more challenging in that sense. But I guess we've been really good in terms of communication. We call each other frequently and just stay in touch. So I haven't found it hugely challenging from my point of view. I just record my bass and send it to south every time it's required, and
yeah,
these guys do all the hard work, so I'm quite lucky.
As much as I'd love to do this full time, it is not cheap, and anyone who says I'm gonna go make it big in a band, well, we've been doing it for more than 10 years and look where we still are. So recently becoming a dad myself, so the money aspect side is getting slightly harder and harder, but it doesn't mean I won't still do what I do, though. I'll make it work regardless.
With that particular perspective that you have, Andrew, what do you think the future of the music will be for the new bub?
He's 1 month old and I'm already playing guitar to him, so I'm hoping he picks one of the three instruments that I play. I've already said he's the fourth member, the fourth Beatle of the Tetsuians, so I'm hoping he takes up music. If he takes up sport, I'm screwed because I know nothing about sport and I don't know how to kick, throw or catch a ball to save my life. So
stylistically, yeah. When Andrew's bub, 1 month, is turning 18, what kind of music do you think they'll be listening to? What kind of music will be being produced at that point? Because you guys are very much on that edge of creating something new. So let's go forward 18 years. What will it be?
I think it'll still be very similar to what it is now. But at the same time, people will still think it's ahead of its time. You know, like bands like the Pixies who came out of the late 80s underground, but nothing else, what they were doing was ever being produced, and they're still doing it now. They actually got a new album coming out this year. So I like to think of it like that we're still doing the music. I don't want to say I want to be a sellout or anything like that. I as long as I'm happy and playing what we've produced, then whatever, if we become a country band and we enjoy it, then I'm happy to still play that music regardless.
Amber, what are you currently listening to?
Pretty much have Middle Kids on repeat at the moment, just loving everything they're putting out. I'm very much anticipating Angie McMahon's first big release, so still very much loving my Aussie rock.
Talk to me about the anticipation of Angie McMahon's release.
Well, I stumbled across Angie McMahon. I went to an Angus and Julia Stone gig. I hadn't heard of her, and all of a sudden I was in love with the support act, which has happened to me quite a few times. And she's just phenomenal on stage. She's a breath of fresh air, I feel, in sort of the music industry or Australian music industry at the moment. Loving her lyrics, and just her voice isn't something you'd expect to come out of her tiny little frame. She's just phenomenal. She's a really good performer, really loving her stuff. So I just can't wait for a full release to come out.
Trent, what are you listening to at the moment?
I'm listening to the new Sleater Kenny release, and obviously there's that huge St. Vincent influence on it, but it's not in a jarring way. It's actually really taken them to another, I wouldn't say another level, but just a slightly different direction, but it works so well because I guess they're both very angular performers. Prompted me to go back through their back catalogue again and just sort of remember how good they were. Because when you talk about bands that don't really sound like anything else, because we go through waves where there's a bit of a revival of a certain 60s sound, like King Gizzard and the Wizard Lizard and all that. It's sort of we know what that sounds like because we've heard that before, but when you listen to Sleater Kenny, I mean, they're all in their 40s now, but they're still doing stuff that doesn't sound like anything else, and it's just an absolute joy to listen to, and you forget how, I guess, influential they were, but they probably didn't get, I guess, the kudos they deserved.
Who would you like to cover? Who would you like the band to cover?
I actually joked about this a while ago when we were joking about doing Madonna's Borderline. not convinced about that one, but I haven't really thought about the sort of song that the three of us would probably, because we've all got such different influences and very different tastes in music almost, that it would be hard to find something that would suit the three of us to attack it and try to cover it and make it different. So not quite sure.
Well, Andy and I both, I guess we agree on Split Enz, and that's probably it.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
I would like to do a Split Enz, but not yet typical, like a really like deep tracks, like, or deep cut Split Enz song. Yeah. Probably from their first album or something like that. Or something 80s, like I'd love to do something.
That was the whole catalogue.
Well, pretty much. Yeah, well, late 70s. Yeah. I'd love to do Dirty Creatures, probably one of my Split Enz favourites. Something from that album, Time and Tide. That's such a good album.
Let's talk about some of the lyrical topics. If, Trent, you're willing to give up some of them, what are some of the social issues that are on this new record that's just been released and will be launched?
Yeah, look, as I said, I don't think I'm a huge social advocate about one thing or another, but stuff just creeps in, you know, you just observe things. I guess the first one's probably the most social commentary, that's Perspex Abattoir. There's a lot of stuff in there and there's a lot of sort of jokiness in there, but it's more... I guess the society we're in at the moment, we're all on our phones. So, and I think the way we process information is becoming very samey or linear. So, you know, we might look at some atrocity in Africa and then flip over to a dancing cat video, but we process it the same way through a phone. We don't react probably like we should to it. It's just one thing after another. You know, that's where that's coming from, that song.
The live performance is just a few weeks away where you guys get to show off the brand new album. But since you're all together in the same room, does that mean there's another album in the works and how far?
We produce songs like we've got that many back catalogue as well as future songs. There's by far definitely going to be a next album coming out. It's just which old songs we rehash that probably people haven't heard of for a really long time and maybe modernizing them a little bit. And then there's some new sneaky ones that we're slowly introducing, which is watch this space type of scenario.
We write pretty quickly, but it's just getting the time to record it. That's the killer, I guess, you know, because we're all work full time, we're doing different things. So it's, and then getting us all into the same room or online, that's the trick. But I think having done it once now, I think we know where the problems were and what to do now. So we've gotten the hard bit out of the way.
If we're a full-time worker who want to be a musician, how do we balance that out? What are some of the tips?
Weekends are always good, especially I think the guitars and vocals are quite easy because you can do that at home. And you can plug straight into an interface, so good old technology, and then straight into your laptop. And you can be quite, you know, you don't have to have amps plugged in. You can do it all from a laptop. So you can do it quite quietly. Where drums is, yes, you have electronic drums, but they don't sound as natural as real drums. The way we record the drums is actually really simple. We just hire a studio, like a rehearsal room. So we've actually been going to Bakehouse Studios just because it's kind of central for Trent and I, because we both live on other ends of the CBD of Melbourne. So we meet up in the middle, set up the drums. We just, one condenser mic we place in front of the drum kit, and we just use the natural ambience of the room and record that straight into the laptop as an audio file. So as the drummer, because I have an electronic drum kit, so I can practice at home my parts. So then when we go into recording, we're only spending like 2 or 3 hours we spent 3 hours to do that whole album on the drums. It may be one or two takes of each song. So really, really quick, because I do all my pre-home work before going into the studio.
I'm very fortunate in the fact that I'm a shift worker. So I do tend to feels like I've got slightly more spare time because I'm not restricted to after work and on weekends only. I've got fluctuating free time, but it's a matter of prioritizing it. You have to be doing that instead of going out and having a beer at the Noosa foreshore. And it's it's just a matter of making it the priority. And like Andrew's saying, we do practice a lot before we start doing the recordings. And so when we actually get to that stage, it's actually quite quick. And I was recording my parts fairly fast as well.
Let's talk about the visual aspects of the videos that you've produced.
I just want to create something slightly different. I mean, you see a lot of film clips out there, especially Australian bands, and it's just always a band playing the song, and it gets a bit monotonous. So for me, it's just about creating something slightly different.
A lot of stuff is very overproduced, and I like the element that, okay, yeah, we're filming off a mobile phone, but at the same time, it's us doing our own thing and we enjoy it, and it's a bit homely, I guess you can kind of say. Our film clips are very homely.
And this now extends to the album artwork as well. There's a particular colour palette as well that you don't mind playing in.
Yeah, it sort of came out of the name, because we had a variety of different name changes before we settled on Tetsuians, but the idea of Tetsuians were it's slightly Japanese but slightly alien as well. And if you've ever gone to Japan, it is a slightly alien environment. They seem like a higher species because they've got everything sorted out. But I like the idea of just a different race that no one had heard of, which is making music, which is slightly different as well. So as an aesthetic, and that the image of that was taken in Japan of the front cover of the album at a digital art exhibition, but there was a red light and there was a lot of people just walking around, a lot of young kids, but they just created silhouettes. So I thought, well, that's probably a good way to capture, you know, something. Well, they look like they're human, but maybe there's something else going on there because they had a different kind of aura around them.
Andrew, do you believe in aliens?
I don't know if I believe in aliens, but I definitely believe that we're not alone.
That's the same thing, isn't it?
Yeah, but I think there's another human race somewhere on another planet thinking the exact same thing as what we're thinking, being asked the exact same question, but they're not aliens.
Amber, you're the one with the psychologist degree here. How do we break down that idea that we here exist, but we here as other exist in exactly the same way?
Yeah. I think there's another timeline. Alternate dimensions, yeah, for sure.
I think the universe is far too large for us to be the only species out there.
Mm.
Well, not just, you know, humans, but on another planet somewhere, there has to be something else existing.
We've been known to send our music out in space for these other to listen to. Do you sincerely think they'll be able to interpret the music we've sent them?
I think so. I think music is probably the only language that everyone can agree on, regardless of what's going on. Music is, it's the only form of language that everyone understands. Regardless of where you are in the world, you can connect with, if someone is playing music and you connect with them, but no matter what's going on in the background, if you don't agree with who that person is or anything like that, but you have that connection through music, then absolutely I think that everyone understands and everyone has that emotional connection with music regardless.
Does that come into mind when you're performing the music as well?
Yeah. When I perform, I kind of go back to my, if it's one person or if it's 50 people, hell, even if I play to no one, I'm still enjoying it because I put a lot of, myself put a lot of emotion, and I know these guys too, a lot of feeling and emotion in my music. I'm not stagnated. I'm very, you know, facial expressions and movements and all that type of thing. So especially with like a lot of music that I listen to lyrically wise, I take on board, you know, where Trent says, well, I don't think too much into the lyrics, where myself is like, I kind of interpret it and I go, I can really relate to that. In that sense, so in my, it's weird, I kind of use my drumming as lyrics so then people can understand that, hey, I'm not just playing a 4-4 beat, I'm actually playing alongside the bass as a rhythm or as a melody almost, not so much as a rhythm, you know, just to keep the four on the floor in that sense.
It's interesting when we were recording the drums, and that's pretty much most of the song started with Andrew. You could tell instantly what the songs were just by listening to the drums. Like I had that verse, chorus, not just the verse, chorus, bridge thing, but you can instantly go, that is that song, because the drumming was so musical. And I guess Andrew's background with, I guess, listening to Rush and all those other great progressive rock band. And when you break that down and try to make it more simple for a pop format, there's a lot of colour there, which I guess, yeah, I don't know. As a three-piece, the drums are really, really important. It's probably more than just, you know, listen to other bands and it's really straightforward drum pattern. And I think we're really lucky to have Andrew to be able to do that because it really has a good signature to it.
There's a sense of tapestry to it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I loved about this band so much is that all three of us, we're not just playing the guitar, we're not just playing the drums, or we're not just playing the bass. It's all three of us are kind of playing our own form of melody, but at the same time it all works as a whole in together. And that's me, and that's, I guess, why I've stuck around for so long, is because each song that we play, it's like that, and there's something about it that just really works.
I think you need to do stuff that you enjoy yourself, and then hopefully other people will too. If you start trying to write for someone else, I think you start falling into a bit of a rabbit hole. But I mean, that's the thing. I'll write a song or a chord structure as well, and then Amber will throw something in. I go, well, hang on, I've just completely changed my chord, but yeah, it's better now, so I'll just go with that. So we're lucky. We're really lucky to be like that.
Yeah, we bounce off each other really well and communicate what we're trying to achieve, and sometimes we do change each other's vibe and what we're doing and what we're playing, but it always seems to complement each other by the end of it, and, yeah, just bounce off each other very well.
Over a decade, many bands don't even survive the year or the week even.
That's right.
What's been the glue for the band over that decade?
Sounds really cheesy, but the music, it is, for me, it's very unique music. I don't think it's a lot like anything else out there. And sorry, it brings me back. And every time I feel like I'm over it, I'll just listen to it and go, oh, no, definitely this is good and this needs to continue and we need to push this. And, yes, it has taken a long time because of the full-time jobs and all the other life commitments that get in the way, but we just keep coming back to it. And it's not just a hobby to have in the background. It is a driving passion that we all love. Definitely what keeps me coming back for sure.
Pretty much the same as Amber. From day one, from when Trent sent me, and he had that comical aspect at the start, and that's what fell, that's what for me fell in love with the music. But we're also a family. There's bands that are just literally, they go on stage, play their song, and then once they're off the stage, they don't talk to each other, there's no connection. I think you got to, A, love the music that you're playing, but as well as you got to love the people that you're playing the music with. And I'll admit, I've been a bit of a band whore. I've played in other bands as well as during the bands, but
it's an open relationship.
It is quite open. But I always come back to Tetsuans because all the other bands that I've played in or filled in for, never been the music that we've played with that I play with these guys. I've never played with other musicians that have played the type of music that we play. And I don't know what it is. It's just, yeah, lyrically, musically, it's just something different that no one's able. I've never gone to a band and gone, hey, I'm going to stay with you guys for 10 years because I like what you're doing. It's like, oh, I'll hang around for a little bit because I need the cash and I play the drums.
So would it be true to say that you save your best material for this group?
Yeah, absolutely. Most definitely. That's because we're all three of us have given the option to not be structured into, okay, you have to play this beat or you have to play it like this. You know, as much as we've recorded it, but we'll never play the same song exactly like the record every time. We always put our own little spin on it every time, which I really enjoy because it kind of gives people a bit of difference. You know, I might play a different feel where on the record I should have played that specific feel that I put on the record. Or so that's what I really enjoy, having that bit of freedom where I've been in bands where it's like, oh, you didn't play that part that wasn't on the record. What are you doing? This is ridiculous. And it's like, well, that's not fun to me. You got to, yes, play the songs that you've recorded or that you've made, but at the same time, you've got to have a bit of freedom with it.
Trent, I want to ask you that question as a songwriter, I guess the instigator of this very group. What's been your glue over the last decade with these two?
I think everything that mentioned is absolutely correct. But I think, I guess with other collaborators and nothing to take away from them or even bands, is that it felt like a little bit of a hard work and there was always a compromise there, whereas this never feels like a compromise. Even when people are presenting different things, you just immediately, yeah, I agree with that. If we feel something's not working, we all just nod and go, yeah, we just wasted 20 minutes on that. But, and often too, we find a lot of the stuff in the album with the songs has come out of mistakes playing live. You know, you just, oh, I accidentally hit that chord. Hang on, that sounded okay. I'll just try that again. And then in front of an audience, we go, well, remember that and just do that. Like some of the best stuff comes out of mistakes.
If only life would give you that much liberty to do that every day.
Yeah, it would be good.
It's almost a subconscious thing sometimes because you're trying to tap into that creative element. And, you know, if it's the end of the day and you've got to try and force something out, it won't always come because you're thinking about it too literally or just in a theoretical way. So if it's something, it's almost like that alpha, beta sleep zone. If you have an accident and something great comes out of it, you just try to create a snapshot of it and bottle it and try to reproduce it. I think we've done that a couple of times. It's always good to lock that in.
Congratulations on your release, an absolute corker, and good luck for the up-and-coming gig.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it's been awesome.
Amber Krask, Trent Price, and Andrew Jackson of Tetsuians. Find the band online at tetsuians.com. Live stream of their album launch 27th of July, 2019.
Hi, I'm Dan Illich, and this is Radio Nodes.
He'll be our guest in a few episodes' time, talking irrational fear, family, and more, while sharing an iced coffee while we chatted, which brought a tear inside, as the great Marsland once sent, unprompted as he would, kind words to Illich about his comedy. They're here later, right now.
Radio Notes Discoveries.
What's come across my desk since last episode? Penny Harlow's Samantha, from their new EP, Looking for My Mind. Some may compare to No Doubt Vibe, from LA, with way more rock to their sound. Then on the ground for much more info on them, but we'll bookmark here that they're out. One more familiar with is out through 604 Records, Marina's Trench. Phantoms is the album out with the single Glimmer. New on them is the album is available now as pre-order on vinyl. There are also signed copies in the mix too. Their latest full-length, Asteria, was a kicking tribute to the 80s with their latest, they say, and I quote, on album 5, they ride on the idea of a haunted house, inspired by Edgar Allan Poe, no less. They've even got a cut called Your Ghost, not to get confused with Christian Hirsch of the same name. This one is a banger. Hugger, that's spelled H-Y-G-G-E, a Sydney, Australia-based duo of a multi-instrumentalist producer and a singer-songwriter, have a cut called Blind Faith, beat lack of patience story, and emotive licks of colourful grooves. Soup of Insecurity 2, lyrically covered as well. As someone who was waiting, this struck a chord, more than one in fact. Even more so, the light of honesty it seeks. The singer has a vinyl record above their happy place that has a piano below. Quite curious who the album is of. Maybe future releases from them will tell. Next episode's guest will be Eaglemount. Playing with them live on stage soon will be Amarina Walters, who has released a brutally open-sounding, brilliant cut, Kickin' Around. A few years ago, they released A Sense of You that comes back every now and again to my random music mix, in good nature way, I'm sure, to soothe. Anywho, to new music, my understanding is there's a new album on the way, recorded in New Zealand with Ben Edwards, who's also worked with Gillian Jacklin, Marilyn Williams, and Aldous Harding, to name three. Do have a listen to Kicking Around, and I'll aim to give you more details when the full length is about.
My number one priority is the mental and physical well-being of myself and the people around me. The second priority is being fulfilled and content and trying. I mean, I'm going to be making music for my entire life, you know, and the concept of maybe making a living out of it is enough to keep me going. And it's like equal parts, like luck and talent and community and opportunity. It's putting yourself out there and having belief in yourself and striving to create the kind of music and image that you want, therefore like the life that you want.
Eagle Mount there, our featured guest next episode on Radio Notes. Let's do a quick
off the charts.
Thanks to the information released by the Australian Recording Industry Association, let's look at the Australian Artist and Album Chart of the week just been at the time of release. New at number one, Dope Lemon Smooth Big Cat. In at two, Thelma Plum's Better in Black. 3C's Starry Night Over the Phone by All Day also making its debut on the charts. Quick look across to the Billboard 200 chart. Banks' latest three is at 21 with the Lion King soundtrack new at 31. Though dropping to 200th spot, Blink 182's Greatest Hits. As for Unlucky for Some, 13, as the soundtrack to Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Dive into the archives.
Can I mention an Australian name I'd like to?
Yeah, go ahead.
Mate, if you ever get a chance, his album's launching in the next few months. A friend of mine, Ben Abraham. Best story ever is Ben loves Sarah, right? So this is a few years ago, he wrote to Sarah. Instead of writing a letter, he wrote her a song. Knew that she was coming down to support Maroon 5 on her tour.
Yeah.
He said, maybe you can come and have a jam with me. So to your listeners, if you look up To Sarah from Ben on YouTube, you'll see a video that he made singing a song to her on his ukulele. He posted it on her Twitter page, her fans. I think it was her boyfriend that found the video, showed it to her. She loved the video so much, they got in contact, and she invited him on stage at Rod Laver Arena in Melbourne, and they got up and sang a song together. She goes, look, I can't do a jam with you, but would you come and sing at my gig? And he's like, absolutely, I would. So he sang, I'm on fire, that Bruce Springsteen song. It was amazing. And they've since kept in contact and written songs together. I think one of them is on the album, his new album coming out.
Yeah, it certainly is. The album coming out, in fact, came out on Friday. It's called Sirens. That's Rob Millsy Mills. And on the line is Ben Abraham himself. Ben, an absolute pleasure, sir. Thank you for taking time out of what must be the euphoria of releasing such a fine debut album.
Yes, that's one word for it. There's a lot of exhaustion as well. But no, I'm pretty stoked, and I love that Rob Mills, my acting PR agent, has gone before me.
Thing was, he could have mentioned anyone in the world. We're having a chat at the Festival Theatre. He had no troubles in mentioning. Now, this story, we should mention quickly for those that haven't heard it. As I think Rob said quite well himself there, the boyfriend of Sarah went, well, this guy seems pretty cool. And you got to play at Rod Laver Arena.
The best thing I think about that whole story is that we became friends, which kind of was not that I was trying to be friends with her or anything, but we connected creatively, and that was, I guess, the reason that I reached out to her in the first place, is that I felt that we would. And over the years we'd try to work on something that we could actually record together, and then finally we wrote this song together that now appears on my album.
It's a collection of what?
I guess it's a little bit unusual. It's a collection of songs that are essentially that were written over the course of my 20s, and what I now see was the establishing years of me as an artist. So the record has become more than just, I suppose, a collection of songs. You know, typically your first record is kind of your best foot forward and here are my catchiest songs, whereas for me this was a bit more about the milestone of, like, here's this entire chapter of my life signposted by these songs. It's not that I set out to do that, but I look back now and recognise that that's what has happened.
I can tell you now, Ben, a lot of musicians may put 12 or 16 songs together that are like this, but they never release it as a debut, as you've just suggested there.
Yeah.
Do you feel a little bit vulnerable about this sort of emotion being put out there, or is it a
completely
case?
Completely. I've spent a long time in Melbourne working, you know, in certain kind of, like, playing on stages and playing to a crowd of my immediate, like, I guess, audience and fans, or, you know, friends and family. And so they, you know, they've gotten to know me, but I guess the vulnerability now is coming from the fact that I'm suddenly getting complete strangers respond to the work. I mean, it's stupid to say this, but I hadn't even thought about the fact that, like, strangers are going to hear it. So I guess in that weird sort of way, it's vulnerable because it's, you know, like, people that have followed me for the last 7 years, they recognise that this is me growing up over the course of this record, whereas complete strangers, there is a vulnerability as an Australian male as well to have music that's pretty sensitive and pretty kind of open. But, hey, that's who I am, and so, you know, it's out there now.
So this isn't a case, Ben, of you moving on. This is a case of you developing as a human.
Yeah, there's a little blurb that I've now written that's actually going to be printed on the hard copy. That's sort of like an artist's statement for what this entire record is, and it basically discusses that essentially it's the roadmap between the days when I first decided that I wanted to be a musician through to really understanding what that was going to be for me. And, it, you know, the songs on the record are actually set out almost chronologically, and they begin quite introspectively at the start, and by the end of the record, they're much more outward focused, and that's because that's the journey that I went on in the creation of these songs.
Somebody's Mother.
Ah, brilliant. Brilliant. That's actually, not being supposed to have favourites, but that's my favourite, I think, on the record. I'm a pretty linear songwriter. I tend to, you know, I feel, therefore I write, and so a lot of my songs are quite easy to follow. But this one stands alone in that it's a little bit more poetic and difficult, and it has a very specific narrative to it, but not many people would know that. I kind of like, because of that, I like not to over-explain it. But I will say this, in a recent publication of, I'm pretty sure it's an Australia-wide paper called the Saturday Paper, Samuel Johnson wrote a pretty beautiful letter, an open letter to his mum. And this song was written for Samuel Johnson's older sister. So if people want to go away and research that, they're more than welcome to. If you read Samuel's letter, you'll get a glimpse into what this song is actually about. But it's a complete enclosed narrative, and it's quite special to me. I feel pumped that you picked that one. Good news.
I'm glad that I've made you happy. Ben Abraham, there is a lot to share next time you're in Adelaide. That invitation is open. But for now, thank you very much for joining Radio Notes.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Ben Abraham talking about his recently released album back in 2014 from the archives. You also heard from Rob Mills, who introduced me to Ben's music. His latest, released in the last week, is called Satellite, out on Atlantic Records. Thanks very much to our feature guests this episode, Tetsuians.
RadioNotesPodcast.com for show notes and links. Web design there by Steve Davis. Theme music by Martin Kennedy and All India Radio. I'm Tammy Weller. John Murch is the producer and host based in Adelaide, South Australia.